to wait for a cop before we start speaking about the drinking shares.
Does anyone not have sheets? There's a blank page for note-taking, if you'd like, at the beginning, but it's only one page. If anybody needs sheets, okay.
Before I begin the actual shiur, I'm going to give a little bit of, a legal disclaimer. Everything that I'm going to speak about only refers to people who are legally old enough to drink. Anyone who's under the age of drinking, so I can tell you in advance that there's not going to be any heteron whatsoever. And I'll tell you a secret, even though it's above the age of drinking, by the time you finish with this year, you can realize this was not a Hasidic shiur. This was a very, very litvish, misnagdish shiur. And if you want to have an enjoyable, I mean, everyone at Yad Hashem will have an enjoyable Purim, but if you're thinking to get some drinking Purims, I advise you to please leave the shiur now, because you're not in for what you're expecting. Let's try to give a little bit of a background to this sugya, really this topic, from a halachic vantage point. Really, what is the halacha? We added this notion, or perhaps a misconception come about, that the notion of drinking on Purim, what exactly are the halachic parameters, what are the halachic guidelines, and how should we really practice this halacha lemaisa today? So the sugya, the topic begins in the Gemara itself. If you take a look on the source sheet, on the first of the Ma'amar Kamos, the first of the sources, a very famous phrase that's even been put to music. Many people sing this at Purim, at this Uda. The Gemara, the first of the sources, comes from Masechus Megillah on the Zayin of Days. Amar Rava, Mechayev Inish Levesume Bepuria, Adelo Yada Ben Oro Haman Lebaruch Mordechai. Translate it just literally, and then we'll try to translate a little bit more as we go on. But the literal translation is the person is obligated. Mechayev is a phrase, is a word that we don't use lightly. One is obligated, levesume bepuria. We are going to translate this now to mean to drink. We'll see as we go on. There may be other interpretations, but we're going to interpret it to mean to drink, bepuria on Purim. A person is obligated to drink on Purim. How much is a person obligated to drink on Purim? Until he can no longer tell the difference between Aror Haman and Baruch Mordechai, and how cursed Haman is, and how blessed Mordechai is. So again, if one takes the Gemara at absolute face value, it sounds like one is not only permitted to drink on Purim, one is obligated to drink on Purim. That's considered to be the proper celebration of Purim. But the story doesn't end at this point. The Gemara tells us a fascinating story. Rabba v'Rabbi Zeira of Dusudas Purim Bahadi Hadadi. Rabba and Rabbi Zeira, two of the great Amoraim from the period of the Gemara, celebrated Purim together. They made a Suda, they made a Purim feast together. If so, and apparently they followed what had just been said previously, Chayav Inish Levesume Bepuria. So again, going with the literal interpretation, perhaps they drank a little bit too much. Come Rabba Shachte Le Rabbi Zeira. Now again, if one takes the Gemara in a very literal sense, it means Rabba actually killed Rabbi Zeira. Many of the Mefarshim say we don't have to take it in that literal sense. We know from other areas of halacha, when a person embarrasses somebody, especially publicly, that's considered to be equivalent of actually killing the person. Chazal, the Gemara, speaks about what's called Malbin Pnei Chaveiro Berabim, one who causes one's friend's face to literally to turn white, to publicly humiliate somebody, is almost tantamount to actual murder. The Gemara speaks about how person turns white, the blood leaves their face. It's literally like shedding blood. So when the Gemara says that Rabba killed Rabbi Zeira, most probably doesn't mean literally killed, as we'll see from the continuation of the story. It probably means the Purim spiel got a little bit out of hand. The skit, some of the Gramin maybe went a little bit overboard. It's probably been at one or two of those kinds of Purim suitors in our life. And what happened? L'malcha boy rachamid achye. The next day, Rabba was davening that he should be able to bring him back to life. Now again, obviously following the interpretation that we're giving, that many of the Mefarshim, many of the commentaries explain, that of course it wasn't physically killed him, as we'll see from the end of the story. It was more of an embarrassing humiliation. He went a little bit overboard. So he, tried to be chozer b'tshuva, tried to make amends. Lashana, the following year, Amarle, as we can tell, he came back to life, quote unquote, or they became friends again. But the following year, Amalei Nesi Ma'avin Avisudas Purim by the Adadi. He was invited again for the Purim Suda. So this time, not so simple. Amalei Lo B'chol Shaita V'Shaita Misrachish Nisa. So Rabbi Zeira responded, not every year does a miracle happen. Namely, last year we got over it. Last year we made amends, but let's each one celebrate our own Purim Suda on our own this year. And that's where the Gemara ends the story. So again, what do we have in front of us? We have a seemingly statement of absolute obligation. Chayev adam l'besum l'purim, one is supposed to drink on Purim. And the Gemara tells us this very, very strange story, using very graphic terms, yet even though we're interpreting the story not in the literal sense, but the terminology that the Gemara is telling us is quite strong, and it would appear that from the end of the story, that maybe we're having second thoughts about what we just said before. Maybe that initial statement that we said about drinking on Purim has to be taken into consideration in light of some of the parameters and perils, to quote a Shia that we're in the middle of talking about. So perhaps that's what the Gemara is indicating to us with this somewhat strange story. So there is a dispute amongst the Rishonim, the early commentators on the Talmud, what we should do with this whole picture. Where do we go from here? We have a statement of obligation. We have a strange story that seems to contradict the obligation. Where do we go from here? So if you take a look at the second of the sources, the Baal HaMa'or was one of the Rishonim who commented, one of the early commentators on the Talmud. The Baal HaMa'or, according to tradition, wrote his commentary on the Talmud at the age of 17. So just in case anyone, I see some of the younger fellows in the audience, and you're already a few years behind in terms of writing your Perushim on the Gemara, but the Baal HaMa'or wrote it at the age of 17. So comes the Baal HaMa'or and he writes as follows, Amar Rabbi Chayiv Inish Nebesug V'Puriyah, Chosav Rabbeinu Ephraim Zal. He quotes from one of the earlier sources, Rabbeinu Ephraim. Mehal uvda dekam rabba shachtel Rabbi Zeira l'shonim. Amalei ton avid v'chulei. From the end of the story, the whole strange presentation that the Gemara gives us, itchilei meimrel derabba. This is teaching us that the Talmud is in fact rejecting this obligation. There is no other reason for telling us the story than to reject halachically this quote-unquote requirement. The leis hilchus l'kavasei, the halacha does not follow that original statement that one is obligated to drink on Purim, the lav shapir dom of the mevid hachi, and if there's no obligation, then it's not appropriate, it's not correct. We frown on excessive drinking all the time, and on Purim as well, argues Rabbeinu Ephraim, that one is not supposed to drink on Purim, although maybe there was such an opinion in the Talmud, that opinion was rejected lahalacha. This is the view of Rabbeinu Ephraim and the view of the Baal HaMa'or. Notwithstanding this interpretation of the Baal HaMa'or and Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Shulchan Aruch does not quote this. The Shulchan Aruch, in the third of the sources, the Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim, in Hilchos Megillah Purim, Simen Tofesh Tadiyeh Sef Beis, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Gemara almost verbatim, Chayav Inish Lebesumi Bepuraya, Ad Lo Yadav Ben Arahom and Lebarach Mordechai. One is obligated to drink X amount, whatever that X amount is, one would be obligated to do so. Apparently the Shulchan Aruch was of the opinion that the Gemara never meant to reject the previous halacha. The Gemara just meant to be careful. The Gemara was just strongly recommending that not to have such exciting Purim shticks, not to have such exciting gramen. Be careful that it shouldn't, chas v'shalom, shouldn't, God forbid, cause somebody else distress. It shouldn't humiliate, shouldn't embarrass anybody. You shouldn't do anything inappropriate. But the obligation remains according to the understanding of the Shulchan Aruch. What does this obligation mean? Now that we're discussing whether it exists, according to the Baal HaMa'or and Rabbeinu Ephraim, it doesn't even exist. It's just scratched off. It's deleted from the screen, according to the view of Rabbeinu Ephraim and the Baal HaMa'or. And even according to the view of the Shulchan Aruch that it exists, but what does it mean? How do we interpret this practically? What does it mean when it's supposed to drink on Purim? So it comes in the Haggah, the Yesh Omrim, in that same source, in the third source, the comments of the Ramah. The Ramah, with Moshe Isserles, was the in a sense, the head of Ashkenazi Jewry. He was the posek for Ashkenazi Jewry in the 1500s. And some of you may have actually been in his shul. His shul is still intact in Krakow, in Poland today. You can actually, I had the very unique privilege this past June to give a shiur in the shul of the Ramah about a topic that the Ramah spoke about in his shul. It was a specific tshuva that he had written about a maisa, a story that happened in his shul. So I was able to tell over all the lumdas in his shul 500 years later exactly what I had to agree to what he said. I couldn't argue, I couldn't disagree with it. Although we did have a fascinating shiur that actually took place in the shul of the Ramah. It was a couple of days after Shavuos, and there were different customs where one says tachanun in the week following Shavuos. So we were davening mincha there, and the question became, what should we do? So I said, I can't do against the Ramah, whatever the Ramah says. So we actually found the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. We found the Ramah on the shelf in the shul. We pulled it out, and we looked up the shayla. The Ramah's opinion was that you have to say tachanun. I know some people weren't happy with that. But I said, you can argue with the Ramah. Hakam lichbosh samalti mevash. You can argue with the Ramah in his own shul. It's okay. So here the Ramah also has a comment. The Ramah says that we misinterpreted what the Gemara meant. And the Gemara said that one is supposed to drink on Purim to an excessive amount. Says the Gemara, that's not what it means. The Gemara never says to drink a tremendous amount. The Gemara says to drink to the point where you get confused, you can't tell between Aror, Haman, and Baruch Mordechai. What does that mean practically, says the Rabbi Yesh Omrin, or those who say, the Ein Tzarech L'shtaka Kolkach, you don't have to get so drunk to reach that point. Ella, Sheyishte Yosem Ilimudo. A person should drink a little bit more than he usually drinks. Baruch Hashem, hopefully we're talking to people enough of the big drinkers. I know myself, my maximum amount of drinking is one cup of Kiddush wine. You know, the 2.5, you know, proof. The stuff that's, it's hard to tell whether it's fancy grape juice or wine. Comes the Ramon and says, you're supposed to drink a little bit more than you would usually drink. So wait, what happened to the Aruham and Baruch Mordechai story? Says the Ramon, be yoshay, and you go to sleep. Go to sleep. Once he falls asleep, so then, by definition, he doesn't know. But if you would stop and wake him up in the middle of his nap on Purim day and ask him, do you know Bar says the Ramah, that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to drink a little bit more than usual. Why to drink anything? Well, we know the events in the Megillah occurred in the context of wine, the context of the parties. So we want to make a little bit of a zecher to that, a little bit of remembrance of that. But to get drunk, says the Ramah, chas v'shalom to get drunk. There was never an obligation to get drunk. There's no permission to get drunk, says the Ramah. One drinks a little bit more than usual and then goes to sleep. And then the Ramah concludes with a fascinating line. V'echad amarba v'echad amamit v'vad shechav en libo l'shamayim. The person takes, 3 ounces, 2 ounces, big reviuses, more reviuses, a little bit. He should have his intention be for the sake of heaven. It's a person who's getting drunk and involved in all kinds of things which are the antithesis of the sake of heaven. So clearly what the person is doing is against the halacha, and one is not required to do that, and one is not permitted to do so as well. This is the psak of the Ramah. How do we paskin the halacha? Comes the Mishnah Brura, and the fourth of the Marmar Kamos, the fourth of the sources, the Mishnah Brura in Siman Tofresh Tzadi Hei, written by the Chofetz Chaim, says the Mishnah Brura, v'chein ro'i la'asos. This is the correct practice. This is how we're supposed to follow. One is not supposed to follow the literal interpretation of the Gemara of drinking excessively. According to many, we don't even accept that Gemara, as we said before. Even according to those who do accept it, it never was meant literally. It was meant to be a little bit more than usual. One falls asleep and one fulfills the mitzvah, and that's it. So we generally follow the Psalkim, the final word of the Mishnah Brura. Mishnah Brura has been accepted in many, many communities as not always, there are other poskim as well, but very often our custom in many of our communities follow in line with the reasoning, with the final conclusions of the Mishnah Brura, the Chofetz Chaim, and here I think there should be no exception to that rule. So those, I find it somewhat strange that some individuals who quote every other Mishnah Brura under the sun about every single possible situation, some of this Mishnah Brura got lost in the shuffle. So the Mishnah Brura says explicitly, this is the correct thing to do. One should not interpret this mitzvah in any other way rather than the way the Ramah has codified for us the halacha. So we're going to work with this assumption that this is the only way to fulfill the mitzvah properly today. The question becomes just practically, how does one go about doing it? Doesn't sound that complicated. Take a Yisim Kiddush cup, get another ounce or so, and have a cup of wine and go to sleep. Sounds very simple. Not so simple for the following reason. If one takes a look at the Rambam in the fifth of the Marmar Kamos, the Rambam in Hilchos Megillah, Perek Beis Halachat Esvav, the Rambam connects this notion of drinking on Purim to another mitzvah of Purim. Ketzad chova sudazo. How does a person fulfill the mitzvah of sudas Purim? We know that a person is obligated to eat a meal, a festive meal on Purim. So the Rambam is writing you a recipe. How do you go about doing it? What are you supposed to serve at this meal? So says the Rambam, sheyochol basar. A person is supposed to have a fleshik meal. One should really serve meat at the Purim suda. It should be a nice meal, it should be a respectable meal, a Shabbos, a Yomtiv meal. The Ram discusses how much wine, but the Ram says, one drinks wine at the Purim Suda. One gets the clear impression from the Rambam that the mitzvah of drinking, whatever that mitzvah is, the small amount, the way we're going to follow it, following the guidelines of the Ramban, the Mishnah Brura, one condition is necessary. It must take place in the context of the Suda. One cannot just drink wine at any point of the day. If a person finishes davening in the morning, and a person goes and takes a cup of wine, that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is part of the Purim Suda has to be, together with wine, the shtiyah has to be, besocha suda, in the context of the suda, then and only then is the mitzvah. That's clear from the Rabbah. Just as an aside, this is obvious, sometimes the obvious has to be stated, the halacha tells us that Suda's Purim must take place during the day. One does not fulfill the mitzvah of Suda's Purim the night before, let's say. That's from next week. Next Motzei Shabbos, so you can have a lot of Malchus Motzei Shabbos, that's fine, but Suda's Purim has to be on Sunday during the daytime. So following the words of the Rambam, if the Suda cannot take place at night, then it is obvious that any drinking in any shape or form, no matter how you define the mitzvah, cannot possibly be the night before. So unfortunately, the practice that exists, sometimes people don't make it to the Megillah the next morning because they were drinking the night before. So it was wrong on many counts. It's wrong because it's not the proper fulfillment of the mitzvah altogether. And it's absolutely incorrect because there's nothing to do with the Suda. The night before, one cannot fulfill the Suda. One cannot even begin to discuss drinking the night before. So all drinking of any shape or form is clearly off limits the night of Purim. Any drinking to any extent only takes place during the day and in the context of the Suda. So now we run into a little bit of a technical issue. If according to the Rambam, this mitzvah has to take place in the context of the Suda, which of course takes place in the day of Yidam, it's Shem, next Sunday, sometime during the day, that's the context of the mitzvah. And putting together what the Ramah just told us, that the way to perform the mitzvah is not just to drink a little bit, but to drink and to fall asleep. So it sounds like all of this is supposed to take place on Purim. That's the plan next week. So you get up for Shachris, you hear the Megillah, you do Mishloach Manos, Matanos Avionim, all the mitzvahs. Sometime during the day you have your Suda. In the context of the Suda, there's this little bit of drinking, this quote-unquote Adelo Yoda, whatever the amount it is, 3 ounces, the 4 ounces, okay, for the big Machmirim, the 5 ounces, whatever it is, a little bit of wine, by the way, just as an aside. No other alcoholic beverages are at all part of this mitzvah. This is clear from the poskim that the mitzvah is supposed to be in the context of wine. As I told you, if you're looking for Chassidus Shashir, you came to the wrong place. So it's clear from the poskim that this only includes wine because all the events of the Megillah took place in the context of wine. There was no beer served at the Megillah, there was no liquor at the Megillah, there was no schnapps, and nothing else. It was only wine. So we're talking about wine in the daytime, in the middle of the Suda. That's the only thing that's even in discussion for how much one is supposed to drink. So one is doing this drinking sometime in the daytime in the context of the Suda. And according to the Ramah, what follows is, presumably, that the person is supposed to fall asleep. When is this falling asleep supposed to take place? Well, presumably, it's supposed to take place, I don't know, in the middle of the Suda. At least on Purim, if a person drinks 2 o'clock in the afternoon, then they go to sleep 10 o'clock at night, that's not the drinking of Purim. So, presumably, this is all supposed to take place on Purim. This is Adlo Yoda. According to the Ramah, Adlo Yoda is supposed to be the shia, that's the amount that one drinks, that's fulfilled through sleeping. So our initial reaction is, all of this is supposed to happen on Purim itself. Why am I mentioning this? Because there's another Ramah, there's another comment in the Ramah, where the Ramah delineates what the normal protocol of Purim is, which is probably pretty familiar with what we're familiar with. The Ramah, in the sixth of the sources, sixth of the Mamakamas, it's on the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah wrote his comments on the Shulchan Aruch, and Ochus Megillah and Simitav Reisadi. Hey, so the Ramah writes as follows: the Nogim Lasa Sudas Purim Liacha Mincha. So first of all, the minhag is that we try to daven mincha early. One of those who are able to try to daven mincha early on Purim afternoon, and the Suda usually takes place after mincha. The Arvish is Paulu Balayla, and Ma'ariv you daven later after the Suda is over. Say you daven Ma'ariv. You try to daven mincha early enough, you don't want to daven mincha right before shkia, then you're going to start the Suda. The day's over already, so you usually have an early mincha on Purim. Says the Ramah, you have to make sure that most of the meal takes place in the daytime, although it's later in the afternoon, but it has to be in the daytime. Unlike those who have the practice that they wash right before shkia. At 6 o'clock, the sun's about to set. 5 to 6, we wash, and the whole meal is on the night of Motzoi Purim. That's not appropriate, says the Ramah. That's not correct. Why is that not correct? That's not Purim. I mean, it's Shushan Purim. We're always happy at Shushan Purim, but that's not Purim. Purim is Purim. Purim is Yudal and Adar. So one is supposed to really plan that the bulk of the meal should be early enough in the day, one should wash it enough time, that the mainstay of the meal, the meat, and the main course, and a little bit of the drinking, whatever it is, should all take place miba'od yom. Then the Ramah continues, u'cheshechal Purim b'yom shishi, sometimes it's not practical, and Purim falls out on Friday, then yasu asudu b'shachas ashim kav b'shabbos, then you can't make the suit at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, then, out of respect to Shabbos, you have to try to make the meal, if you can, before chatzos, we try to make it in the morning. But on a normal Purim, the custom is to make the Purim, the Suda, in the afternoon. But says the Ramah, Misha rotze lasos a tamid b'shachas a shes b'yado. There's no halachic reason to make the Suda in the afternoon. You can make the Suda like a Shabbos meal. You come home from the Megillah, you come home from davening 10 o'clock in the morning, you want to sit down and wash and have meat and have wine and have your whole meal at 11 o'clock in the morning, it's fine. You're allowed to do that also. There's no halachic requirement to make the Suda in the afternoon. So where did the minute come from? Where did the custom come from that we're familiar with? Most of us, except when Purim is on a Friday, we always have our Suda late, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Where did that come from? So it came from one of two possibilities. One is just a very practical concern that people are busy on Purim until you finish the Megillah, until you get your Shalach Manasai, until the Yonim, until the masquerades, until your kids, a lot of things going on in Purim. So no one had a chance practically. You can't sit down to the meal until you finish all the other mitzvahs. That was the practical concern. But there's a halachic reason as well. There is a certain halachic reason to perhaps prefer to make the Suda in the afternoon because we want the Suda to go a little bit into the nighttime. Why is that? Because there is a mitzvah to have a little bit of a Suda on Shushan Purim. One does not have to have a full Suda on Shushan Purim, but there should be a little bit of a special meal, a little festive occasion on Shushan Purim. So therefore, if you start your Suda's Purim, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, by the time you get the good desserts out for Shushan Purim, so at least you chap a little bit of a simcha, a little bit of rejoicing on Shushan Purim as well. So there's a reason for where the minute came from, why in particularly Ashkenazi communities there is such a custom to make the Suda's Purim later in the day rather than earlier, either just practically, for practical concerns, or for the halachic concern of Shushan Purim. But one thing is absolutely clear, is that the Ramah tells us that the main part of the meal has to be in the daytime. You can't have it at night. You can't wash 5 minutes before Shkia and then eat the whole meal at night. That would be inappropriate in terms of the proper celebration of Purim. But it's clear from the Ramah that the end of the meal is going into the nighttime. There's no question about that. The Ramah had no problem with the end of the meal schlepping out into the night. He just wanted to make sure the bulk of the meal was in the daytime. So now let's just practically put all this piece of information together. What does this translate for us practically? The person sits down 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they're going to sit down to the Purim Suda. Okay, they call the Suda for 4, by the time they sit down, it's really 5. I know, I also have kids, I know it's going to. So it's 5 o'clock. Okay, 5 o'clock, the person sits down to their Suda. So they start having their Suda. So they're having their Suda, they have their basar, and they have their meat, and they have their yayin, they have a little bit of the wine, and they drink their very, very small shir of Adel or Yada. And now what? So the Suda continues, and the Suda continues, and now they're singing, and they're dancing, and it comes time for benching, and it's ready after dark. And now what? So the Ramah told us that a person has to go to sleep. Because if a person doesn't go to sleep at some point, so then they didn't really perform Adlo Yada. Now Adlo Yada presumably has to be in the middle of the Suda. So what does that mean according to the Ramah? Just pray, what happened in Krakow? Put ourselves back in Krakow in the 1500s. I told her I was in Krakow. So one of the things that struck me about Krakow was that the entire city, the whole part of the Ramah, where the Ramah lived, was a total of about 3 blocks. So I tried to explain this to my kids, you know, when I got home, I try to explain it to them, can you imagine growing up your entire life in 3 blocks? That's the whole thing. It's not from here to about across the street. So what are they doing, Krakow? What was the Ramah advocating? That people were sitting down to their Suda late in the afternoon. When were they going to sleep? Everyone was walking out in the middle of the meal. Everyone went to bed in the middle of the meal. You don't get that impression from the Ramah that people were collapsing in their Suda. You don't get that impression from the Ramah. So when did the sleeping take place exactly? Where did this mysterious sleeping, this mitzvah of Adla Yada, the Purim nap, when exactly did it take place? So there's an interesting machlokes between two of my Rebbeim as to how to solve this dilemma. It's hard to know. We don't have a time machine to go back to crack on the 1500s, but what was the Ramah advocating doing? So machlokas with the Rebbe Shechter and Rebbe Willi. I've heard shiurim from, they've probably both been out here at the different, okay. So Rebbe Shechter suggested that he thinks the answer to this riddle of the Ramah is very simple. When the Ramah says that you have to fall asleep to fulfill the mitzvah of Adlo Yada, the Ramah didn't mean you have to literally fall asleep. The mitzvah is not to fall asleep. The mitzvah is to drink enough wine that would put you to sleep. How much wine? Look, I was up at 4 o'clock this morning to get here. And as it is, I came late for Shacharis. But it wouldn't take that much wine to knock me out at this point. So after the whole day of, you know, Purim Chagig the night before, and you're running around with your kids all day, and Rosh Hashanah, by 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I would say a couple ounces can knock the person out. But he doesn't fall asleep yet. He's busy singing, he's busy dancing, he's busy having his company, his family. So he doesn't practically get to sleep. But Rebbe Shechter argued, he doesn't have to literally go to sleep. You have to drink enough that will potentially put you to sleep. When's he going to go to sleep? He conks out at 9 o'clock. After Meir, he conks out. That's fine. That's okay. That's the mitzvah of Adlo Yada. So even though the sleeping didn't take place on Purim, the drinking, it's like a lomdish, it's like a brisket Torah, that the drinking, the amount of drinking took place on Purim, that's good enough to fulfill the mitzvah. So according to Rabbi Shechta's understanding of this Ramah, so the Seder Hayom, the basic schedule of the day is very simple. You have milk for the Megillah in the morning, and you have your Shalach Manes, and you Matal Savionim, and you have a Mincha, and at some time, 4 or 5 o'clock, you sit down to your Suda, you wash, you have your Basar, you have your Yayin, you have your one cup of wine, you're really Machmi, you have your second cup of wine, and that's it. And you drank enough to be Adlo Yoda. Did you practically go to sleep? You didn't go to sleep yet. You go to sleep. When everybody leaves, you go to sleep. That's perfectly okay. Either sleeping will be after Purim, that doesn't bother us. That was Rabbi Shechta's interpretation of this Ramah. So my other Rabbi, Rabbi Willig, didn't think it was true. He said, if the Ramah is saying that Adlo Yoda means you have to go to sleep, so how did you go to sleep after Purim? How does that help? I'm gonna fulfill the mitzvah of Purim Pesach time. It's after Purim already. The night of Shushan Purim. If you live in Yerushalayim, that's the night of Purim. But Purim's open for us. In Chicago, last Pesach was not a walled city from the days of Yeshua Ben Nun. So Purim is Purim. Purim is on the 14th day of Adar. So what's Pesach? So Rabbi Willig suggested as follows. He suggested that maybe there were two different parts of the mitzvah of drinking in Purim. A brisket, a lomdish mitzvah. The Rambam describes part of drinking as part of the Suda. There's a halacha that when you sit down to the Suda of Purim, you have to have wine at the Suda. Why did the Rambam say that? So it shouldn't surprise us, because the Rambam, if you take a look at the seventh of the sources, the Rambam Menuchas Yom Tov, in Perek Vav, Halacha Yud Zayin, the Rambam begins by telling us that this is really true about any Yom Tov. Shivas Yimei Pesach, the 7 days of Pesach, Vishmaris Yimei Chag, the 7 days of Sukkos Pesach, Shmini Atzeres, the 8th day, Yimshai Yom Tovim, including the other Yom Tovim, Shavuos, the Rambam probably included Rosh Hashanah in this, Kulam Asurim Behesped of Itainis, one is not allowed to fast or give eulogies on these days, V'chayiv Adam Leil, then Sameach V'tov Leil, the person is obligated to be happy and joyous on the days of Yom Tov. We call Simchas Yom Tov. What does that mean practically? So the Rambam continues, if you go on to the next halacha, the next paragraph of that of the same source, halacha yitches, what does it mean to be happy on Yom Tov? Says the Rambam, Ketzan, haktanim nosdem kloyas ve'gozim mcdonalds. So the children, you give them little nuts and little candies. Now, that was in the old days. Today, what do you give them? I don't know. You give them Game Boys, iPod, I don't know, whatever the kid, whatever. I'm not advocating that. Saying, what do you give them? Little things that make them happy. And a husband is obligated to buy for his wife new clothing for Yom Tov and jewelry, anything that she wants for Yom Tov, he's obligated. It's a mitzvah deraisa of Simchas Yom Tov. I repeat that, make sure all the husbands heard that. Simchas Yom Tov is deraisa. What about the men? Says the Rambam, Ochlin Basa, Vishosin Yayin, She'ein Simcha al-Basa, V'ein Simcha al-Yayin. The Rambam describes Simchas Yom Tov. He's not talking about Purim. He's talking about Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and maybe Rosh Hashanah. Not a word about Purim here. Rambam says Simchas Yom Tov requires wine. So then it shouldn't surprise us that the Rambam's vision of a Sudas Purim also should require wine. Nothing to do with Adlo Yada. This has nothing to do with unique Purim. There's the mitzvah of Simcha and Purim also. You may Mishnah v'Simcha. So a person has to treat a Purim Suda like a Yom Tov Suda. That's what it is. You know, many of us have a custom, the Poskim write, of dressing, wearing Yom Tov clothes, so as the masquerade, wearing Yom Tov clothes on Purim, because Purim is a shtickle Yom Tov. It's not a real Yom Tov. You're allowed to work on Purim, but it has certain dimensions of Yom Tov to it. So the Rambam says, just as your Pesach meal, just as your Shavuos, Sukkos meal, has the Basa V'Yayin, so to your Purim meal, it's supposed to have Basa V'Yayin as well. That has nothing to do with the unique dimension of remembering anything about miracles, about drinking, nothing to do with remembering about wine and Purim. This has nothing to do with Achashverosh. This has to do with Simchas Yom Tov. That's one halacha. And that's what the Rambam was describing. But then there's another halacha, that we're supposed to make a zeichel and ace, we're supposed to remember that the miracle of Purim took place through wine. That's a different halacha. That's unique to Purim. That's something which is only a Purim, that doesn't apply in the other Yom Tovim. So Rabbi Willig argued that one could, in a sense, distinguish between these two obligations. One could fulfill one obligation in the context of the meal, and the other one not in the context of the meal. The dimension that the Sudas Purim has to mimic a Sudas Yom Tov and requires wine, so that's part of the Suda. So you have to have wine at the Purim Suda. How much you have to drink? A ravias. So a cup of wine, the same as like any other Yom Tov. You're supposed to have a little bit of wine at the Suda. That's for Simchas Yom Tov, and that's fine. Then the additional mitzvah of drinking, quote-unquote mitzvah of drinking on Purim, that can be done not on the Suda. That can be done in the morning also. That's like Kriyas HaMegillah. That's like Sen Shalach Manas Matan HaSevi'anim. That you can do in the morning. So let's map out the day, the way Rabbi Willig sees what the schedule of Purim is. Person wakes up in the morning, goes to davening, hears the Megillah, does the Shalach Manas, does the Matan HaSevi'anim. 12 o'clock in the afternoon, you fulfill the mitzvah of drinking on Purim. It's not the Suda yet. It's the mitzvah of drinking. Don't do it Suda. Mitzvah of drinking on Purim. How much you have to drink? Enough to put you to sleep and to go to sleep. How much do you need? By 12 o'clock on Purim, I'm knocked out enough. 1 to 3 ounces of wine or revias. You have a cup of wine and you take a nap. So whereas Rabbi Shechter advocated that you could take the nap after Purim's over, Rabbi Willick said, no, you got it. Like I said, Rabbi Willick said, you're taking a nap on Purim. How could you? How about Lo Yod if you're not taking a nap on Purim? So you have to take the nap on Purim. It doesn't have to be a long nap. It has to be a smallest nap, 1 second. I know in my house we have the rule that on Purim, the kids have to let me fall asleep for 1 second. Once they see the REM, I don't know, they see the eyes moving, they realize I'm sleeping, then they have permission to wake me up. But they have to make sure, alibi. But it's a gezeira the rest of the year up to Purim, they have to wake me up every other day just to make sure that I'm not set up. So for 1 second you fall asleep on Purim in the daytime, so you fulfill the mitzvah of drinking on Purim. You didn't fulfill Suda's Purim yet. So now you gotta wait later in the afternoon when the family comes, it's 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, you're not the mincha, you're all set. Then you start everything all over again, not the Megillah all over again. Then you bring out the basar. Then you have a yayin again. How much? Or a revias of yayin. And then that's simchas Purim. That's not drinking a Purim. They're two different mitzvahs. So it comes out, if you do the math, if you tally up all the alcohol, hakol mikol, you have the following interesting machlokes in the two Rosh Hashivas at YU. So Rabbi Shechter's total amount of wine on Purim for revias is 3 ounces. It's 3 ounces. That's it. It's one cup of wine that you fulfill Suda and Simcha and Shti and all. It's all one shot at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. According to Rabbi Willis, he's a big machmir. He says you need 6 ounces of wine spread out throughout the course of the day. It's less than Pesach night, I can tell you. 3 ounces at 11, 12 o'clock earlier in the day, which leads you to take a nap. And 3 ounces again at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So it should be a Suda Spurim with a Simcha with the yayin all together. So that's the machlokes. You're talking 6 ounces versus 3 ounces. And even the 6 ounces is not at the same time. It's two different cups of wine spread out by 5 hours in between. That's the Masorah that I have. That's the tradition that I have. These two different approaches as to how to fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Purim, how to perform the mitzvah of drinking at Purim properly.
According to Rabbi Willig, then, if it's not tied to the Suda, you should be able to do it at night.
But it could be that it's no worse than any other mitzvah sayom. It's the same way that the Mishloch was, even Matanas Avionim, which is not tied to the Suda, probably has to be in the daytime. So all, even Kriyas HaMegillah, the Ika Kriya is really in the daytime. The Kriya at night is probably on the Midrabanan, and the secondary Kriya, the primary Kriya is really in the daytime, Pashtas. So it could be that even according to that, it would have to be done in the daytime. So in all the dust settles, we have two very, very different approaches in the world of Halacha to the amount of drinking on Purim, when the drinking is supposed to take place, and what tried to reconstruct how the Ramah would actually view the proper fulfillment of the mitzvah.
How does the Ramah really continue?
The Pashtus in that the Rambam himself doesn't sound this way. Because the Rambam says the Yishtaker is Derech HaSuda, the Rulik saying is Pran of the Ramah. Because according to the Ramah, the Ramah is ending up contradicting himself. Because the Ramah is advocating having the Suda late in the afternoon, and he's also advocating sleeping. So then you have to draw one of three conclusions. Either the guy is falling asleep in the middle of the Suda, which I don't know, somehow doesn't sound right. Or you have to advocate Rabbi Shechter's approach that the sleeping is done after Purim's over, which Rabbi Willick found hard to accept. So the only other way to solve this dilemma is to come up with this idea that there are really two different halachas in drinking, which again, within the Rambam, probably not true. But according to the Rambam, perhaps it's true. Perhaps. I just wanted to, just to conclude, a little bit of Divrei Machshava, just a little bit of a thought, something to leave us with, besides the actual, not to say the heavy-duty drinking that we just did, but just a little bit in the world of Agadita. Usually we think of the Suda's Purim, so we think of is really as a celebration of the events of Purim. Of course, the remembering of the Nisim, which involved a lot of Shtiyah and Suda, things of that nature, which is true, definitely is a dimension of that. But if one takes a look at the Gemara seems to connect the Suda's Purim to another historical event as well, and that's the event of Kabbalah Satorah. What is the connection between the Suda's Purim and Kabbalah Satorah? So the Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos that the original acceptance of the Torah, the very first Shavuos, so was not fully complete for the following reason, that the Jewish people to a certain degree were coerced into it. Yes, they said Ma'aseh Nishma, yes, they accepted it to a certain degree, but it was hard for them to turn down the offer. Hashem had just taken them out of Mitzrayim. The Gemara speaks about what's called Kofalem HaKegigas, that Hashem either physically or symbolically lifted up the mountain above their heads and said, listen, here are your two choices. Either you accept the Torah or you spend the rest of your days under the Sinai Desert. So they didn't have that much of a choice in terms of accepting the Torah. Again, how you understand the Gemara is a topic in and of itself. But the Gemara tells us that what happened many, many years later in the days of Purim was a re-accepting of the Torah. Kimu v'kibla Yehudim, the Jews willingly accepted to observe the Torah mitzvahs once again after the miracles of Purim unfolded. And in a certain sense, the celebration that we have on Purim is really the completion of the celebration of Shavuos. It's really the culmination of the Kabbalah Satorah, the acceptance of the Torah that had it really transpired almost 1,000 years before, but it reached really its final stage during the celebration of Purim. And we reenact that the Suda, the meal that we have in Purim, is a little bit of a Suda for Kabbalah Satorah, besides being a Suda to celebrate the historical events of Mordechai the Esther. What is the significance of this? So the Ksav Sofer, the son of the Chasam Sofer, has a fascinating tshuva in Drush, where he suggests the following interesting insight. Imagine a person is sitting down celebrating that they just got the Torah. They're having a great meal that they're having the Torah. When you see somebody eating a lot, even drinking a little bit more than they should, so we can draw one of two conclusions. We know sometimes a person is so depressed, a person is so down in the dumps, that they're trying just to forget about all the sorrows. They never, a person starts to drink to forget his sorrows. Sometimes people eat out of the ordinary in order to forget their sorrows. So you see a person eating and drinking, it's not necessarily an indication that he's happy. It may be an indication that he's miserable. On the other hand, he may be thrilled. He may be very happy. He's making a little chayim. He's toasting. His child just got engaged. He's on top of the world. He's inviting it. So you can't tell. So you see a suda. You see balsa. You see yayin. You're not sure. Does the balsa of the yayin mean that he's very, very happy? Or does the balsa of the yayin mean he's miserable? He's trying to forget all his woes. What's the litmus test? How do you know what's really behind the person's intention? Says the Ksav Sofer, does he share it with others? So the person who's miserable, leave me alone. Let me have my meat and wine. Let me be by myself. Don't bother me. The person who's celebrating, he's celebrating a chasana. He can make chasana down to other people. So he invites people and he wants to share. And he wants to spread. He wants to spread the good word. He wants to give of his suud. He wants to give of his meal, of his boss, when he's out to everybody around. That's the demarcation between the person who's eating and drinking out of misery, the person who's eating and drinking out of total joy. Says the Ksav Sofer, now we can begin to understand, why does the halacha require of us to give shalach manos on Purim, which we don't have any other Yom Tov? There's no mitzvah shalach manos on any other of the Yom Tovim, only on Purim. Why is that? Says the Ksav Sofer, because if a person has a su'uda, he has a boss of a yayin on Purim without the shalach manos, we're not really sure. Is this guy happy about the Torah? Or is he not so happy about the Torah? A person calls in his friends and he says, let me share with you my joy. I'm so happy about Purim. I'm so excited to be re-accept the Torah. I want to share that joy with others. That's the sign. That proves beyond the shadow of a doubt what his real intent is. When a person really loves something, a person's really happy with something, they want to share that with somebody else. So this whole celebration of Purim is geared towards others, Mishloch Manos, Matalas Levyonim. It should really put into proper perspective what our relationship with should be with the Torah, not just on Purim, but the entire year, that a person truly loves something, so they want to give it to others, they want to share with others, they don't want to hold it on to themselves. That's the true sign of a real love, a real cheshef, a true devotion to Torah. A person wants to constantly give and bring it to others, invite other people to the shirim, and find other people to learn in the base medrash, and bring whoever you can bring in to the base medrash, tov olechem bracha. That's the greatest sign of the tremendous joy and excitement that a person has in terms of his learning. So hopefully this Purim, we should be able to merit to celebrate not just the particular historic events of Mordechai the Esther, as great as they were, but we should really open ourselves up to truly experiencing the joy of Purim and the joy of Torah and being able to spread it in the right way. And I think perhaps through the proper fulfillment of this halacha, whatever lumdus you take, the Rabbi Shechter model, the Rabbi Willig model, whether you take that extra cup of wine or not, but again, done in the proper perspective, the proper halachic guidance, so I think that one will actually enhance one's joy, and the true joy of the day being the joy of Torah. As Chazal say about the Megillah itself, Yehudim Aysa Ora V'Simcha V'Sosim V'Yikar, Ora Zu Torah, Ora for us the Torah. The Ramah himself writes that before one sits down to the Suda's Purim, there's a custom to say a little bit of the Torah. That should put the Suda's Purim into the proper perspective. Hopefully that should serve as the proper model for us and all the Jewish people. So, Yehudim Aysa Ora V'Simcha V'Sosim
V'Yikar. Thank you so much, Rabbi. I want to thank Rabbi Sobolovsky. Your question? We'll take 2 minutes of questions, then we're going to break before Rabbi Engel. So we can take just 2 minutes.
It's always safe to talk.
In my days at NYU.